One team performed and cruised, and another produced a comeback to book the first two places in the Champions League quarterfinals. Sterling and Havertz were Chelsea's goal-scoring heroes in overturning a deficit against Dortmund, while Benfica hit five against Brugge to show they mean business. We discuss Tuesday's action and look ahead to Bayern Paris Saint-Germain and Spurs versus AC Milan in the UEFA Champions League. Welcome along, I'm Rob Daly. European football expert Kevin Hatchard is alongside me to break down everything for the round of 16 second leg, getting back underway. Graham Potter, Kev, celebrating, punching the sky, the most animated we might have seen him as Chelsea head coach so far.
Yeah, rightly so, and I think his team played for him in this game. I think they showed intensity. I think in terms of the shape of the team, it was very similar to what a good Potter team produces. We saw that at Brighton many, many times. Thought the front three was very dangerous. Joao Felix, Kai Havertz in particular. Thought they worked hard in midfield, defended strongly. And over the two legs, probably the better team went through.
And Benfica through as well.
Outstanding. I mean, they've just carried on what they did in the group stage. You know, they've lost Enzo Fernandez, who was one of their key players. Carried on as if nothing's wrong. They're scoring goals. They can hurt you in lots of different ways. Nobody is going to want to draw them in the last eight.
Well, I think Brugge will be proud of their first appearance in the knockouts of the Champions League. And Dortmund supporters in their pocket of Stamford Bridge right now, giving a standing ovation to their players that nearly managed to get that goal to take it to extra time against Chelsea. A reminder of how the games went on Tuesday night. Chelsea 2, Borussia Dortmund 0, 2-1 on aggregate. And Benfica 5, Club Brugge 1, 7-1 on aggregate. OK, as Chelsea's players celebrate at Stamford Bridge, let's start our analysis from the west of London. Chelsea, of course, trailed by 1-0 after the first leg in Germany against Dortmund. Kevin was watching the action alongside Joe Shannon.
Lovely back heel by Havertz to find Kovacic, bursting towards the edge of the box, tackles flying in, Chilwell crosses in low, and it's Sterling who misses his kick. Can he get the rebound in here? Sterling! Hammers it in! No mistake from Chelsea this time! The tie is level, and hope renewed for Graham Potter and Chelsea! An explosive finish from Raheem Sterling, who knows just how to score and how to win matches in the UEFA Champions League.
Lovely turn by Sterling, and he plays it left to Chilwell. Left on edge of the penalty area, Chelsea on the attack straight away. Chilwell's crossed the appeal for handball.
You can see that it is jutting out a little, and that's the angle that Danny McAleese just seen and has given the penalty.
Havertz, left-footed, stuttered run-up, hits the post, and Dortmund clear! And the referee has signalled that the penalty is going to be retaken. Well, was there some encroachment, possibly? What will Havertz do here? Hands on hips, big deep breath, hesitates with the run-up and rolls it into the corner. He went the same way, and so did the goalkeeper. And the German scores against Dortmund, and Chelsea have turned the tie around. Chelsea 2, Dortmund 0 on the night. Chelsea lead 2-1 on aggregate. And what courage, calm and poise from Kai Havertz.
Commentator Joe Shannon joins Kev and myself. Now, Dortmund were without their first-choice goalkeeper, Gregor Kobel. That was the team news that was breaking in the run-up to kickoff. He wasn't out, and they're already without Adeyemi, who scored in the first leg. Chelsea, three at the back, four changes from the first leg. And Joe, they showed real intent, Chelsea, it felt like, from the start of the second leg.
I think a really significant night for Graham Potter, who hasn't had it easy going necessarily since joining the club to replace Thomas Tuchel, but a performance to me that showed that without doubt this Chelsea squad is fully behind the manager and fully, I think, behind his methods tonight. We saw a setup that has become very familiar for Potter, of the three at the back with the two wing-backs that he's employed. James and Chilwell, I think, were key to everything that Chelsea did tonight. There was a real fluidity about the front three. João Felix when he was on the field, Sterling when he was on the field, and Havertz, I think, had one of his best games in a Chelsea shirt for a heck of a long time. They created plenty in the early stages, could easily have been two or three up before the goal, which came at a crucial time, I think, just before the first half ended. And then that retaken penalty early in the second period put Chelsea back in command. I think if you're a Chelsea supporter, it was a very satisfying night and a real sign that the progress that Graham Potter has been talking about on the training ground may now be starting to filter through to the field of play itself.
And they took some chances, which makes a difference. They actually did show some more ruthlessness in front of goal. I think when you've got world-class players like Joao Felix, like Kai Havertz, we're still relatively young men, we shouldn't forget, who've packed a lot into, still short careers. When you've got players of that quality, you've got a chance against anybody. But the difference tonight, really, was how often has he had Ben Chilwell and Reece James fit at the same time? Not that often. And I thought they were excellent. Kovacic played a captain's role in midfield. Thought they defended fairly solidly and were a real threat up front. Dortmund will look back on it and think that they had a bit of bad luck. Meyer had to play, did okay, but he's not Gregor Kobel. That's not Meyer's fault, but that is a drop-off. And Julian Brandt losing him in the first 5 minutes is a nightmare for Dortmund because he's been in such good form. And they were trying these little 1-2s, which is what they do around the penalty area, little popping off 1-2, just to stretch holes in a defence. If you haven't got Brandt, it's much harder to do that. And so they're setbacks that you can't do much about.
What did Chelsea do that hurt Dortmund so much?
I think when they dropped Joao Felix into those, and again, this is classic Potter, really, when they're in those half spaces, if you like, the old inside left and inside right channels, what that does is it either drags Emre Can across from his defensive midfield position, or it forces a centre-back to come out. And because Chelsea were able to draw them out and use the space in behind, we saw Joao Felix would drop, Kai Havertz would make the run, and those two combined really nicely. Sterling was making some of those runs as well. And because they played the ball a lot more quickly than they have done in previous games under Graham Potter, Dortmund found it really difficult to deal with it. And Dortmund also, as a byproduct of that, couldn't get control themselves and dictate the game.
Do you think Graham Potter, I mean, it's a big leap maybe to say this at this point, but do you think Graham Potter maybe has a blueprint, Joe, tactically, of what he's... I mean, he's without Badiashile tonight because he is not registered in the Champions League squad. All these guys who come in, but has he found something closer to what he can do now for the remaining 2 or 3 months of the season, do you think?
I think it feels like it in terms of setup. I mean, the one thing that you really have to feel for Graham Potter about, and is certainly a mitigating factor, is the amount of injuries that he's had, and a consistent flow of injuries, really, ever since he's joined Chelsea. Even tonight, I don't think you would look at that side and necessarily say that's his first choice Chelsea setup, because Thiago Silva, who is probably still their best defender, even in his late 30s, wasn't available to play and is now out for probably, well, several weeks, if not the rest of the season. So he's been unlucky with injuries, but I think, as Kev said in commentary, having the two fullbacks in tonight, James and Chilwell, both finally fit at the same time, I think gave Chelsea a real sense of balance offensively, defensively, on both flanks. And I think that three at the back setup, which worked for them in the Premier League, maybe to a lesser extent against Leeds at the weekend, is now clearly the way to go forward.
What's interesting about Potter is he's not necessarily always one thing. He can be quite a chameleon tactically, and he likes to try things. And when he first got to Chelsea, he was trying Raheem Sterling as a wing back, he was trying a few things out, and actually the results weren't too bad in the opening weeks. When things started to go against him and the injury started to mount up and they had some bad results, he then did go back to what he knows and kind of has gone for this 3-4-3, and it worked, and those top quality players were able to shine. However, it's still not an overly dominant performance. Jude Bellingham misses what, by his standards, is a very presentable
super
chance.
Super chance, yeah.
Then puts a header over the top. That was a much more difficult chance. But were Dortmund in it? Yes, they were. So it's not a case of them blowing Dortmund away, but it's a step in the right direction. And I think, emotionally, a night like that where you've got the fans celebrating, where you've got Potter pumping his fist and all of that, I think it just strengthens the glue a little bit, and it just buys him a bit more breathing space to do what he's very good at, which is being a coach on the training ground.
You see the camera panning to Todd Boehly at every instant, every major instant in the game, and he certainly seemed delighted at full-time to see his team into the quarterfinals. Were it not for Kepa as well, I mean, he made a couple of tremendous saves. That wonderful Marco Reus free kick first half that he turned away, and the chance for Marius Wolf into the second half. But Kev, how much we saw the away fans give them a wonderful reception at the end of the game, but how much of a concern will it be for Dortmund that they are being a little bit, have become a bit round of 16-y? This is sort of the stage they get to. How desperate were they to sort of break through and get into a quarter final again?
I think they were, just to kind of maintain the momentum of 2023. I mean, right. You've got to remember, at the end of last year, or going into the World Cup, they lost back-to-back games at Wolfsburg and Borussia Mönchengladbach, and they were on the floor. I mean, they felt like the title push had gone. They weren't sure how the season was going to go. Emre Can talked about it ahead of the game. And they've really turned that around. They've wiped away a 9-point deficit in the Bundesliga. But this is a blow. And I think what will annoy them is they'll add up the two legs and think, did we play well enough over those two legs to go through? I think if they're being really brutally honest with themselves, they probably know they didn't.
I think that's the consensus. When you say, Joe, that yes, maybe they've had their unlucky moments, and then there's a penalty decision, there's a retaken penalty. We don't see many of those. Right decision by the letter of the law to let Kai Havertz have another go. Did they do enough on the night, really?
No, I don't think so. I think they played the game in patches. They had that spell at the midway point of the first half where they probably looked their most threatening, and then a little spell towards the end of the game where they huffed and puffed, and there was a good save from Kepp, as you said, to deny Wolf, but it wasn't like a flurry of clear-cut chances in front of the Chelsea goal. Some mitigating factors. Allaire, as we said in commentary, is clearly still working his way back to being as prolific as we know that he can be in front of goals, still trying to find that instinct again. Bellingham's missed a sort of chance in the second half that usually you'd absolutely bank on him to take. And I think the Julian Brandt injury, as Kev said, was a big one, because Reina came onto the field and, look, we know he's a quality player. He's only 20. He's going to keep getting better and better. But it felt a little like the occasion swallowed him up to some extent. So a tough night for him, tough night for Dortmund, and maybe even in the first leg, Chelsea had plenty of attempts on goal, and the winner was a stunner from Adeyemi. So I think on the balance of play over the two legs, the better side did go through.
We're waiting to bring you a reaction from the Chelsea camp very shortly, but on Potter again, Kev, are you a believer in matches that are turning points? Does this look like that kind of thing for Chelsea? Because right now, mid-table in the Premier League, it looks like they probably won't qualify for the Champions League via the league. This competition, bizarrely, might be their best bet of getting back into it.
I certainly am a believer in nights and moments and games that can define a manager's reign. Mm. No question about that. I believe in him as a coach. I like what they're trying to do in terms of bringing in young talent. They're doing it in a hurry. They're doing it in a way that a lot of clubs would do it over two or three transfer windows. And you're asking a coach to do a really hard thing, which is A, integrate a lot of new players at once, not all of whom are experienced, not all of whom have a long track record. And you're asking him to do it without pre-season. If you want a top coach who's quite nuanced in his approach to build something, you've got to give him that time. He hasn't had that yet. But I believe in the project, and I believe in him, and I hope for him as a guy and for Chelsea as a club that he gets the breathing space to do it.
Let's get that Chelsea reaction then. In a moment, we'll hear from Kai Havertz. But first, the man who opened the scoring, Raheem Sterling.
It was a massive performance. We had to dig deep, and we took our chances. You know, recently we haven't had the luck, and you know, tonight we felt it as a team, and we knew we could do it. And Kai done it in the end.
I think the last few weeks were hard for us. You know, we lost a lot of games, so today was important for us because we know the Champions League is an important tournament. So it's our last tournament we're in at the moment. So we have to give everything for that. And today we showed character. We showed that we want to win this competition again, and that's the most important. And now we have to build on this and also win games in the Premier League.
Kai Havertz there. Joe, how about the way he stepped up for that penalty? Because he'd hit the post, obviously missed it, and we all thought it was a lifeline for Dortmund. And he went the same corner, exactly the same penalty, nerves of steel really, to make it 2-0.
I think great bravery, and I think actually he deserved the goal for that courage and for what he showed in the first half, where he was unlucky with one effort that came back off the post, thought that he'd done everything with a low strike with his left foot, and it's one of those that it's hit the inside of the post and spun along the goal line to safety. Had a great goal disallowed rightly for offside after a VAR check. He pinged it into the top corner, so he'll have felt that goal was coming. But I think to step up at this sort of moment in a game of that magnitude, at 1-1 in the tie, having missed the first spot kick, usually what you'd imagine would happen in that situation is somebody else takes up the responsibility. But it takes real guts and courage to do it again, let alone to take the penalty in exactly the same way.
Let's not forget, this is a guy that got the winning goal in the Champions League final and then got the winning goal in a Club World Cup final. Yeah. So he's a man for the big occasion. And I thought he was outstanding. I thought the intensity he played with, he was up for it physically from the get-go. He was quite happy to mix it. You know, he's barging people out the way.
Well, you don't need a striker, do you? Liverpool have been an exponent of this, and Barcelona in the past.
So here's the big debate around him, and I've always felt he can play the role because he can be strong, he can protect the ball, but people look at him and think, he's not a 20, 25 goal a season. There aren't many of those around, and I do believe he can link the play, he can bring others into it, so he can certainly play a role as a centre-forward.
By the way, Raheem Sterling has now got 27 goals in the Champions League. Only Wayne Rooney on 30 has more. Sterling also has 17 assists to his name. Speaking of, England stars of the Champions League gets to get the reaction of Dortmund's Jude Bellingham, who gave credit to Chelsea.
They created a lot more. They were a lot more dangerous, played with a lot more intent than us. I know I've just looked at the possession stats and it says that we've got more, but it didn't really feel like we had it in the places where we was going to hurt them. So it's really disappointing given the way we were able to kind of keep control of the game, keep the game in front of us at home. But I think they've come out and they were the more purposeful team tonight.
It's interesting he says that, because when I saw the stats, when they'd pop up with possession, it was almost jarring to see that Dortmund had had so much of the ball, but they have been beaten, they failed to find a way through, and it is Chelsea who went into the quarterfinals of the Champions League. More on this game shortly, but let's next go to Portugal, where Club Brugge were looking to recover. They were 2-0 down after the first leg against Benfica, and John Bradley was watching.
And Gonçalo Ramos now on the left-hand side, on the corner of the penalty, looking for Rafa Silva, takes the ball down, now tries to get it out from underneath his feet, and scores a quite stunning individual goal. Oh, it's another moment of inspiration from this little dynamo of a midfielder. João Mário coming in off that left flank, Gonçalo Ramos twists one way, turns the other, round two men, and scores another picture-book goal from Benfica. A special side in this UEFA Champions League. That's a lovely ball by Chiquinho to Arsnes and then outside towards Alex Grimaldo and Rafa Silva onto Gonçalo Ramos. 3-0. Oh, they're carving Brugger apart with such ease now. João Mário can't quite read it, but it's won back by Gilberto, who goes down, and that's a penalty. João Mário with his right foot, Simon Mignolet in goal, and he rolls it beyond the goalkeeper, who goes the wrong way. What a night for Benfica. Beautifully done again as they go from one end of the field to the other, and Benfica switching it up through the gears. The goal will stand. The VAR check is over, and David Neres has scored. It's a fifth for Benfica.
That's nicely done by Buchanan, who drives across the penalty area, and the strike is quite glorious.
Wonderful goal by Bjorn Meyer, but it's a consolation goal for Brugger. Left side of the penalty area, outside of the left foot, bends it into the top corner of the net. Brilliant goal. It's Benfica 5, Brugger 1.
Yeah, it was a sensational strike, but it will be little consolation for Brugge. 7-1, the defeat over the two legs. And John Bradley joins Kev and I on the show now. John, I suppose Benfica showed their intent from the first minute tonight.
Yeah, relentless and ruthless. They thought they were in front inside a minute through João Mário, but that goal was chalked out for offside. And before they went in front, they could have had three or four, some really good chances. Meyer, who scored that wonderful goal late on for Brugge with a sensational clearance off the line. The 19-year-old actually had a game to remember. I mean, attack-wise and defensively, he did really, really well. It won't say that in the stats, but for him, you know, obviously some moments. But for Benfica, I mean, they are relentless. They are ruthless. They have their own little Fab Four up front who do not give defences a minute's peace. They pop up all over the field, they're constantly rotating.
and they're a joy to watch. And I, you know, you guarantee that there will not be anyone relishing facing Benfica in the quarterfinals of this competition. The first time that they've made successive appearances in the Champions League quarterfinal in their history as well. So it's a special night for all involved in the club.
Rafa Silva is the official UEFA player of the match. He scored again and he's actually got 4 goals in 4 games in the Champions League. Is he the jewel of that attack right now, John? I know it's not easy to pick because Gonçalo Ramos is lighting up this competition.
I know. Gonçalo, I mean, you were talking a moment ago with Kev when you were talking about lacking a 25-goal a season. Well, Gonçalo Ramos, I think, has got 22 now for the season, and he's easily going to get 25. And he, you know, he's the hammer, but Rafa Silva is the one that creates everything behind him. Little dynamo, scored a wonderful goal, set a couple up. And, you know, he retired from international football this year. And I don't think that his relationship with the national team was great, but, you know, Benfica have really benefited from that. He is obviously a player that fits into the way that Roger Schmidt wants to play. And the focus is very much on using him, getting him into the game early on, into the opposition half of the field, and then just letting him work his magic. He's always been a special talent this season, though. I mean, if he goes on, he could easily become the player of the year in the UEFA Champions League. He'll be in the team of the year, guaranteed.
I think the key to Benfica as well is that they can hurt you in lots of different ways. And João Mário, I think, has had a career renaissance under Roger Schmidt. And what Roger Schmidt does in general is he gives attacking players license. And there's always been this debate about him, certainly when he was in Germany at Leverkusen. There were a lot of people who said, oh, he's too gung-ho. It's too chaotic. He would say the complete opposite to that. He says, and this is, he's very proud of the fact he's got an engineering background, and he always says, look, the reason I do this is pure probability. If I stack the attack with lots of players, I'm more likely to score goals. How do you win games? Oh, you score more than the opposition. That's why I do it, because it gives us the best chance to win. And this Benfica team are underlining that every single time they play. They finished above Paris in the group stage, and they did that by scoring a ton of goals. They saw off teams like Juventus, and they've approached this in exactly the right way. Win a tight game in the first leg, build the platform, and then go and dance.
Well,
on that
all platform. These attacking players as well, John. You look at João Mário. I know he's on penalties, but João Mário, 21 goals.
Yes, astonishing. What a night for him tonight as well. You know, he's made history tonight. He scored in a fifth successive UEFA Champions League match. It's equal the record of the immortal Eusebio that was set in the 1960s. You know, what a feat for him. And it was really funny because he thought he'd scored after a minute and they thought they'd equal the record there. And then they got a penalty, you know, with, 25 minutes to go. And Gonçalo Ramos was on a hat-trick, picked the ball up and walked over to João Mário and said, there you go, it's time for your moment. He was substituted straight after that, and a wonderful ovation around this entire stadium. And you can see this is a team that is very united, very together, and off in search of you know, the ultimate greatness. And as we say, I thought they were really good in the competition last year. They've sold, 200 million euros worth of players since then, 2 players, and they still look as strong. And that's testament to the players that have been left behind and also the players that have been brought in since as well.
And the head coach, let's hear from Roger Schmidt.
For now, we are very happy to be in the quarterfinal. And like we did the whole season until now, we always try to do step by step. And I think when we are very focused for 90 minutes, then we are always able to play good football and to fight for wins. And I think that's something we can also confirm in quarterfinal. So we hope we have the same shape. We will wait for the opponent, and then we try our best to play good football and to fight to promote to semi-final.
Yeah, back-to-back qualifications into the quarterfinals of the Champions League for Benfica, but they look really menacing under the man who took over last summer, Roger Schmidt. Club Brugge eliminated, having failed to get out the group stage on 9 separate occasions. They did it this season, but fall of this stage, let's hear from their boss, Scott Parker, reflecting on a difficult night.
Well, of course, very disappointed, first and foremost, with the result. Look, I can't fault in any way the players' effort and endeavour. Tonight we've come up against a team that obviously a very, very good side and probably put us to the sword a little bit in that sense. And we come up way short in that. We didn't come up short, like I said, in terms of an endeavour about us. I didn't see players quitting, and full credit to them. But of course, the result and the scoreline is disappointing for all of us, really.
Scott Parker there, the Club Brugge head coach, after their elimination from the Champions League on Tuesday night. So we now know our first two quarterfinalists, Chelsea and Benfica, and four more clubs are hoping to reach the last eight tomorrow. It promises to be another huge night of European action, as Chris Parrott reports.
Matchday Live is back on air from 8 p.m. CET tomorrow. And Munich's our base for an epic showdown.
Whips in a good ball for Kingsley Coman. Takes the shot on first time. Right-footed. And the goalkeeper got down but couldn't keep it out. Donnarumma was deceived. And Bayern made the breakthrough.
Having lost at home, Paris have it all to do. They'll be dreaming of another Kylian Mbappe masterclass.
Mbappe latching onto a ball. He's outside the area now. One-on-one with his man. Mbappe delays, shoots and scores. Absolutely magnificent from Mbappe. What a game. What a goal.
Mbappe was untouchable when Paris last made the trip to Munich 2 years ago. And he looks set to start tomorrow after returning from injury as a sub in the first leg. We'll have full match commentary from 9 p.m. CET. And regular updates from London too.
Here comes Theo Hernandez into the area, rifles it across. Forster has made a double save, but it's forced over the line. And Milan have got the first blood.
Seven-time winners Milan haven't been beyond this stage since 2012. This tie is far from over though, according to Tottenham midfielder Oliver Skip.
We have to keep positive. It's only the first leg, and we know with our fans at home that we'll be a dangerous side.
So another enormous evening of Champions League football awaits on Wednesday. You won't miss a thing right here on Matchday Live.
Chris Parrott there. Paris Saint-Germain, of course, rocked by the news that Neymar is likely out for the rest of the season after ankle surgery. And AC Milan, massive news for their Mike Maignan back, having missed the first leg in goal for their visit to Spurs. 1-0 up from the first leg. Kev, how do you see these ones going?
I think they're going to be fascinating. I think Paris against Bayern is all about how much damage Kylian Mbappe can do. We saw towards the end of the first leg how dangerous he can be. Bayern play a very high defensive line, so the key to that game is whether Kylian Mbappe can get in behind them. And if you look at the Spurs-Milan game, that's about how Spurs can open up this Milan team, because if you're talking about the Milan team towards the end of last season that won the Scudetto, then you'd say no. But Milan have leaked a few more goals in 2023, so there'll be chances for Spurs, but they've got to start well. They've got to be on the front foot, got to get that crowd involved. They'll actually be at that one, and I'm looking forward to it very much. I think the atmosphere will be terrific. Tottenham have to use it.
There is already one London team into the knockout stages, the quarterfinals of the Champions League now, and that is Chelsea. Let's get the thoughts of the UEFA player of the match and their win over Dortmund, Marc Cucurella, who feels the Blues were strongest over the tie.
The game in the first leg, we play good. Maybe we don't control small details because they score in a counter-attack, but I think the team play really good. They create some chances, and then we know for us it's a very important game. It's maybe at the moment one of the games of the season, and I think we play together. We need to put everything in the pitch, and I think this is an important win for us.
So Cucurella was the official player of the match. Joe Shenan was our commentator for the match. And Joe, I want you to pick your own.
Kai Havertz, big man for the occasion in the Champions League in particular. Courage and calm and cool to take that penalty and score it for the second time.
And John Bradley was watching Benfica 5 Club Brugge 1. John, your thoughts and your player of the match as
well. Yes, the UEFA Technical Observer selected Rafa Silva as player of the match, and who am I to disagree with the Technical Observer? Gonçalo Ramos, Raul Mario and the like, they're the paintings on the wall, but they don't get put there without Rafa Silva. He is a little magician and will be a big threat to everyone in the quarterfinals. And Benfica really are fun to watch again this year, and we're looking forward to seeing them in the last eight.
Thank you very much, John. Kev, you get the final word, your player of the match in the Chelsea game, and your final thoughts on the match.
João Félix, smooth as silk. I thought it was a joy to watch, actually, in that game. I think Chelsea deserved it over the two legs. I feel like it could be a turning point for Chelsea. They've obviously got to back that up. but I think it was a really good performance actually from Chelsea, and it shows the players are playing for the manager, and that's always a good sign. Dortmund just fell a little bit short.
Kev, John, Joe, thank you very much for your company, and thank you everyone for listening. That is just about all we have time for this evening. We will be back on Wednesday the 8th of March from 8 p.m. CET for more live action from the round of 16 second legs in this season's UEFA Champions League. What a game from Munich on the way. Full commentary of Bayern versus Paris Saint-Germain, the German champions, one up from the first leg, and live updates of Spurs versus AC Milan, the Rossoneri leading that one 1-0. And don't forget to download our podcast after every match night. But for now, from me and the rest of the Matchday Live team, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to UEFA Champions League Matchday Live. Oh.